Hello, and welcome to Android Developers Backstage Podcast. I am Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Chad Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
And I'm Chris Baines from the Developer Relations team.
This is Chris Baines' visit number two. But today, the special tweak on it is that we actually, last time we had fake Tor. This time we have real Tor.
That's right.
We have Tor.
Yes. This is going to be great for me.
You agreed not to talk about tools today. That was part of the agreement. Remember that?
Sigh. Okay. Well, we'll see. Right.
So I've joined the second show team. Who else is in this?
We have Dan Sandler, Kirill, who thought that he was the first guest to come on the second time. It was a bit,
so the first was
tragic when he realized that was not the case. Is that it?
Yeah.
Tor and I have each been on a couple.
Just a few.
So, yeah. But yeah. So welcome back.
Thank you.
And we actually have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do. The last time we talked about AppCompat, I think basically sorting out what's the difference between AppCompat and SupportLib, that's about all I remember.
Yeah, I mean, that was lollipop time, wasn't it? So that was 6 months ago, something like that? Feels like a lot longer than that. But
V21. It was a release ago, which is like a lifetime.
Yeah.
Especially this one. I think the AppCompat has been doing so much in the last year. And then there's this other thing called the design library, which I...
Okay, so before we get into the details, what is the difference between design library? What's the distinction between the design library and support library? Is that purely a marketing slogan?
No, they're all kind of support libraries. They all come under the support library sort of banner, if you like. AppCompat and Support V4 are mainly for backporting things. So they're supposed to give you API parity to the framework across as many API levels as we can give you. But we've also started doing new features in the support libraries, things like Recycler View, Card View, and the Design Library. They're all going further than what the platform gives you. So they're all, it's all like unknown territory. It's all new stuff.
So what is the V4 part of support library?
Oh, God. So V4 was a sort of old history thing where that was the minimum SDK supported when it first came about. And previously, that was how the support libraries were all organized. It was all done by, that's the minimum SDK supports, therefore it's the V4 support library, or the V7 support library, or the V13, or whatever it is.
So we have both support V4 and V13. What's V13 for?
V13 is for apps which have a minimum SDK above 4. But the
basically
distinction...
every single app.
Yes.
Okay.
But there's a V7.
No.
Yeah.
No.
There's no support V7.
There's multiple V7s. So
but that's not. It's not called support V7.
No, it's not.
Okay. All right.
All right.
So yeah, it's confusing. It's confusing for me. I don't work on it.
Yes. Chet works on the framework. They have min SDK of whatever the current version is.
Yay!
I wish I had that.
There is only one framework. It's a little less confusing.
Right, and it's always the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay, so there's a bunch of support libraries, and so design library is one of them.
Yes.
And unlike AppCompat, it does not do app compatibility. What does it do?
No, so it adds new stuff. So Google released the material design spec, or guidelines, lollipop time, sort of last year. And we've kind of left developers on their own and how to actually implement all this stuff.
We thought they would enjoy that more. We thought, you know,
you'd
it's an intellectual
challenge.
But when
you read like Reddit and stuff like that, they don't quite enjoy it. So yeah, we've tried to give them a stock sort of off-the-shelf set of components which work all the way back to Android 2.1, which is decades ago. To make it easy. Not all the components. We don't give everything because the material design spec is huge. We give you the main things, the things that most developers are going to use. Things like the floating action button, like the circular little button.
That's what you call the fab button?
The fab.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is pretty easy, actually, on Lollipop, because we have stuff like the view outline provider, which allows you to sort of clip a view nicely, and elevation for shadows. But going back, it's a bit more tricky.
So the design library then goes back?
It does.
It's a bit like AppCompat in that way?
Yeah. So, yeah, it works all the way back to Android 2.1.
Wow.
And it even gives you shadows back to Android 2.1 as well, via a fake shadow thing.
You have shadows for the fab button, or you have shadows for any shape that
just
you
the
are.
Fab.
Okay, the fab button. All right. Is that like a hack with like bitmaps or?
No. So it's basically the thing that powered Card View.
Okay.
And I ripped it out and made it work nicer with circles.
Okay.
So
yes, it is bitmap.
Yeah,
though.
So it's nine patches basically,
and yeah, it's but not you nine had patches. It's
not
all
okay.
Shape. It's all canvas.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. So it's not real shadows, but it is actually drawing geometry, yeah, exactly. Like translucent geometry.
So that means that it can cast a shadow outside of its bounds. No, it cannot do that. Okay, all right.
No, it's still inside the bounds, which makes it tricky when you have things like padding or you set margins on the view. Yeah. Because if you set, say, a margin of 16 dip on the fab on L, the margin will be 16 dip from the actual circle bounds. But when you go back, because we also have the shadow within the bounds of the view, your margin is actually more like, I don't know, 20 or 30 dip visually. Okay. So that, we have to work around it, basically.
Okay.
All right, so there's fab, and there's fab, and then there's...
So the other components are, we have something called text input layout, which is... most people saw like the floating label UI pattern, which is basically you have an edit text, and you have some... The hint basically shrinks and collapses based on your focus state. So it goes up to the top or expands as a normal hint does. So we added that. So that's quite
Wait, is this where... Okay, so the hint that I'm thinking of for text fields usually is inside the text field, right? Now, what's this about the text field shrinking?
So the pattern is when you start typing text into that text field, you don't see the hint anymore.
I see.
So when you start typing text, that hint will actually sort of collapse above the text field, so you can still see it.
Cool. So, yeah, does it move the text field down, or does it?
No. It's all within
the sounds magical.
It moves the hint text up, and it animates it, too, which I was surprised at, because like scaling and moving text, sometimes you don't get really the effect you were going for.
Yeah, that was a pain. Yeah. So that was some code I wrote, about a year ago, some prototype code I wrote, and actually released it on sort of publicly. And it's kind of been refined since. I've been working on it for a while. And I was talking to some of the graphics guys in Chet's team, trying to optimize it and make it work nice. But yeah, it's really good now. It's I've kind of refactored into its own little helper class. And so it's used both within text input layout and also something, the collapsing toolbar layout, which is when you have a toolbar which collapses. So you have large text when it's really expanded. And then as you scroll, the text will shrink. So that is the same class, it's the same method, same everything that's powering both of them. So we can use it in multiple places. If there's anything else we can think of which uses shrinking text, we can use it there too.
Sounds cool. I'm going to make sure we add that to the new layout editor's palette.
Cool.
All right.
Actually, there was another part to that too. Wasn't there also an error validation state or something?
Oh, yeah. So we have a method on it called setError, which basically gives you a material design spec error message.
So is this if the user was supposed to enter phone number and your app's like, hey, you didn't enter the phone number, it'll highlight like the red required or like an asterisk on the left or something like that?
Yeah, so the platform version is sort of a drop-down type thing that displays over it, which isn't the spec. So we just added some that does. It's not very exciting. It's just some text that fades in and out, which is red.
We should go yell at the platform folks for not being the spec.
Yeah. I'll send an email right after this.
Okay. Well, red text animating in sounds kind of exciting to me.
Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we have fab button. We have this text thingy.
Yep.
What else?
Text thingy.
Well, I don't know how to describe all that.
Oh,
an error validating, shrinking, labeled text field. What did you call it?
Text input layout. That's what it's called.
It's a layout?
Yeah, because you have to put an edit text into it.
All right.
So layout synonymous with view group. Yeah. Or
well, you know, at least I want to thank you for not using the word wrapper in that name. That's very good. Okay.
Factory delegate.
The docs do say wrapper.
It's too good to be true. I knew it.
So the other stuff we have something called navigation view, which is a sort of stock off-the-shelf content view for drawers. So the spec for material designs, sort of side drawers, side navs, whatever you want to call them, it's quite detailed in the way it pads stuff, it sort of has that way text is styled, the way the header is shown, all that kind of stuff.
You're talking now about the drawer thing you slide in from the left.
Exactly.
Okay, yes.
So it's not the thing that it's not the component which does all the sliding, it's the thing that's actually displayed within it.
Okay. The menu thingy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So we've just give you a stock off the shelf version basically.
So what does that provide that you wouldn't get by simply saying, well, I've got a linear layout in this drawer thing?
The trouble is you get the more complex your sort of navigation, the more complex this view gets, and it does get pretty complex pretty quickly.
So you have things like categories
with
different fonts. And
so the public API for this is actually something all developers have been using for years, and it's menus. So we've done it via menu resources or code. So you declare your menu resource with submenus or titles, whatever, and it just it works out all the layout for you. So it's pretty cool, actually. It's good for tools because you've already got menu editors and stuff like that already within the tools.
Well, we have menu viewers. We will soon have a good menu editor.
Okay.
That's part of the new layout editor.
Okay, so it's not about like complicated functionality, but rather about providing consistency for how people are using and displaying this thing.
Exactly. Try and make it as simple as possible for people to use it.
Yeah.
I know Google Apps tend to also have an account picker, at least for people who have multiple Google accounts. Is that something that this addresses, or that's more of an internal need that
It's more of an internal need because there aren't many apps.
Probably a power user thing. How many people actually?
Domain.
We'll run a poll. Shall we run a poll right now? How many people in the audience? Okay, raise your hand now if you have more than one account on your phone.
Only if you can do it safely. Drivers, just keep your hands on the wheel.
All right. Keep the hands up.
Did you get a count?
I did.
Right.
Yeah. What was the final count?
I don't want to go over
it. Okay.
Yeah.
So we do actually have some plans to add this, but it's low priority because there aren't 70 apps that you need. See ya.
All right, that's all.
Well, was that it?
It's been a good interview.
Yeah, there's more than that. So the other stuff we added is all about toolbars, app bars, as the spec calls them. Now, UX went for this kind of sprint stage end of last year, I think it was, where they sort of defined a set number of app bar scenarios. The first is just a toolbar, as we've all had for years, so just an action bar. Second was with tabs. So we've added a new tabs component called tabs layout, tab layout.
But can you just because I'm a little lost. We had the action bar for many years. That was like a ice cream sandwich, honeycomb invention. Okay.
App Compat added it. Jelly bean.
That was like the reason for App Compat, right?
It
was basically it was a rewrite of the Action Bar Sherlock, right? We're internal.
We talked to Jake about that.
Yes. Right. So that was the beginning of App Compat. But so Action Bar sat at the top. They could also sit in the bottom, right? For like phone layouts. That was common, right? Mm-hmm. You could have two action bars, maybe.
It was a split action bar.
Split, that's right.
That's called now.
Yes. Okay. So we got rid of all that and replaced it with toolbar. What's the reason for that?
Replaced. It's
replaced.
Additional.
Toolbar's additional. Should anyone use an action bar today?
Probably not. Toolbar gives you a lot of nice stuff in that you can control exactly where it's placed in your view hierarchy, which is the whole point where it's created. It's to give developers flexibility of how to actually use it.
And style it as well, right?
Exactly.
Like you can do more. A toolbar is a view that you can style as opposed to an action bar is just an action bar and it's a bit opaque from the outside, right?
Well, exactly. But bar still uses toolbar underneath.
Yeah.
It decides where it goes.
Yep.
Okay. So you said not really when I asked if people should use action bar. Is there anything that an action bar would do that this wouldn't?
Toolbar. No.
Okay. All right.
So toolbar exposes the same API, right? Or implements the same API.
It does, yeah.
Right. So it is an action bar. It's just an action bar that is a view that you can control and style.
Exactly.
All right.
Do other things with. So what about action bar activity? I'm a little confused. When you look at App Compat, we have this action bar activity thing still in there. Are people using that? Should they not be using
it? Well, it's deprecated.
What's that?
So yeah, we replaced it with App Compat activity.
Was in which release?
22.1, so that was February, March time, something like that.
Okay.
You can still use action bar activity. It's just basically like an alias.
But the IDE will flag it as deprecated. And this happened after we shipped Android Studio 1.2. So we got all these users saying, why are you creating projects with deprecated APIs? And how do I replace it? Because we also hadn't taught the IDE what to replace it with. 1.3 does that now, but it's a little sad.
Okay.
So yeah, you have to use it basically. If you want to use App Compat, you have to use this base activity.
Okay. Yeah, because I think this was a point of confusion around that same time frame where we were telling people about the toolbar thing, but then basically people would extend action bar activity and they sort of have this. It was a little confusing, like if you wanted to extend a different kind of activity, but you wanted an action bar like that.
So
how does that work? Because I know that the way you used to do this is you would call get action bar in your activity, or if you're using support library, you'd call get support action bar. Mm. Is that still irrelevant when you're using a toolbar?
Yes. So
what is that? Is there more than one toolbar in your layout? Can there be?
There can be more than one toolbar.
What does get support action bar do then?
So when you have a toolbar, you can also set it to be your action bar.
Uh-huh.
And so what happens is as soon as you, so there's a method on App Compat called set support action bar. also on the on activity called set action bar for the framework version.
I see.
And so when you give your toolbar, well, you, when you set your toolbar to be an action bar, a number of things happen in that all the menu population, sort of all the items, get populated from the standard menu callbacks. So on create options menu, on prepare options menu,
Yeah, so it'll use your app's icon and everything if you're... Well, actually, I guess we don't do that anymore.
That would be one thing you would do, but it doesn't anymore.
Okay.
All right, but so you started talking about toolbars, like this this pattern that we're propagating elsewhere. So we
need
have
to stop interrupting
tab,
him.
Tab toolbar and so, some of the other
stuff. So yeah, we've added a new component called tab layout, which gives you tabs. It's pretty simple. There's been many implementations of tabs in the framework. We've had one on action bar, which is now deprecated. I also wrote a sample, which seems to be used everywhere. But yeah, we've given you a proper first party, go use it kind of thing. The API is very similar to what you'd get on the old Action Bar API, so it's pretty nice to use. And there's also some nice integration points with ViewPager, because that's what most developers are going to use it with. So yeah, that's tabs. So yeah, going back, taking back a step, UX had all these five scenarios of toolbar. The second was toolbar with tabs. The third one was toolbar with some shrinking, flexible space, they called it. Which is basically when you have a toolbar at the top and then some text underneath, which grows and shrinks as you scroll. So to do that, we added something called app bar layout. An app bar layout is kind of special in the way in what it does, and that it's basically a container which scrolls itself. And we should probably take a step back even further than that. So let's go back to the very root of what the design library actually is. So the main thing within the design library is something called coordinator layout, which Adam wrote in Chesteam. And it's this really kind of supercharged frame layout, if you like. It supports three or four main things. The first thing is that it supports something called view anchoring, where when you have two children as in that coordinator layout, and you want one to always follow the other, so say you have a list item within this coordinator layout with an ID of, I don't know, list, and you want another view to always follow it as it moves on and off screen or up and down, whatever. You can actually anchor that fab view to it, and that's what it does. So coordinator is really cool.
Okay, so what's the distinction between that and relative layout, where you can also tell views that they are positioned relative to other views?
So coordinator layout does this on every draw. So it means even when the view changes, so saying a list view or a recycle view, whatever, and the user scrolls up and down, it will still follow it. Whereas in a recycle view, it wouldn't, because there'd be different hierarchies.
Yep. Right. So relative layout, it's all about the children in directly in that container. It's a flat way of referencing the views, whereas coordinator layout is about the view hierarchy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Plus, my impression of the way animations work is that they work without affecting like a re-layout pass. They will translate and add to whatever the layout positions are without actually changing them. Whereas this, if it's on paint, would also pick up on those coordinate changes then?
Yes.
If one were to animate, the other thing would also follow it.
Exactly right.
Yeah, because you're going to be changing the layout position of that thing, although you generally wouldn't animate that. This is going to be moving on a scroll on a user gesture.
It works on both. It works on layout, so top and bottom, and it also works on translation X and Y.
Right. I mean, you generally don't want to animate just because you're going to be running layout to make those changes, right?
Yeah.
Which generally a bad thing.
So the second thing it supports is keylines. Its kind of support is very early days on that. But basically, you can set a keyline within the coordinate layout, and you can assign views to that keyline. And then it'll always... So it saves you setting
I'm sorry,
margin.
What's a keyline?
Yeah. It's sort of a... It's a magic term.
Let's just for a moment assume I haven't read the material spec, in the last week.
I wouldn't even know how to describe a keyline.
Buddy implemented it, ladies and gentlemen.
A vertical line which all things align to, I guess.
So if you look in the material design spec, they talk about the necessity of having 8 dips between components as well as things aligning on these sort of magic boundaries. And it's a way of providing this, consistent layout to all applications. And keylines are the concept that, you want your text to start at, so-and-so inset padding. And if you look through the spec, you get the impression that this is something that the framework provides, but it never did. right? Like we have the ability inside any particular layout, like relative layout or linear layout, to, you know, have your margin and padding, and you could do something in there. But if you're talking about things within the view hierarchy completely aligning to this magic line, well, then you need to set up each of your layouts all the way down the hierarchy.
I see. So this is why people wanted to use things like grid layouts, is because you could sort of have cross column and cross row alignment. And this gives you another way to do that, right?
Well,
where unrelated layouts can still refer to the same key line and be relative to that.
Yes. I mean, grid layout wouldn't go far enough because,
no, that's
again,
still a single,
it's
but I'm
not
saying if you were to,
right?
Yeah, but the idea is you would flatten your hierarchy into a single grid, and then you can have, hey, this is a logical column, which is a key line.
Yeah. Make it easier to align.
This you can still be free to use, you know, whatever the layouts that you want to use.
With coordinates like that, you can set key lines, if I remember rightly. You can set like a key line and it give it like a basically a value from the left hand side. So say 16 dips, whatever it would be. And then any views within coordinate like that, you can set a line to this key line. So it saves you setting padding or margin on every single view you want to align to that key line.
Yep.
It just does it automatically.
Yeah. And then you can animate the key line. And this would be very exciting.
I'm sure you can, causing layout and once again falling off the cliff that we're trying to bring Tor back from.
So what else does it do? So the other big thing it does is something called behaviors. Now, behaviors are basically like a delegate pattern for views. It allows you to attach custom code to any children within a coordinate layout, and you can affect its layout, its measure, scrolling, all sorts of weird and wonderful things. And hopefully what it gives you is a way to not have to create loads of custom views. So, for instance, I've done it in past when I've created apps where you create, like, I don't know, my image view extends image view, and all you're doing is changing on measure to do some weird and fanciful thing, like, I don't know, change the max width or do something weird. And instead of doing all these custom views now, what you can do, you can attach code to it instead, which allows you to stay using the framework widgets, but also you still have your custom code. You can still customize measure or layout where it's positioned.
So does it insert hooks into the paint and measure faces of the layout?
Yeah, exactly what it is.
Okay.
This would be draw. We would call that the draw phase, but I don't think that's
true. No, it
doesn't
do draw. It's just layout measure.
Yeah. Okay.
And some other things scrolling and other things. But so basically, when you have a behavior set on your view, coordinate layout will, first of all, check your behavior, and it will dispatch the layout call or measure call, whatever it is, to that behavior. And the behavior can say, yes, I want to take control. I will do whatever I want. Or if it doesn't, it will do its normal frame layout-y type measure or layout. So the reason why this is really powerful is that all the components within the design library use this extensively. For instance, like app bar layout, the thing that sort of controls toolbar scrolling, that uses it like loads to actually be able to react to how a scroll view scrolls. So you have your app bar layout, and then you also have some sort of scrolling view, say a recycler view or a scroll view. And you attach sort of stock off the shelf, we provide it for you, behavior class. And what that means is app bar layout and this scrolling view can then can scroll in place with each other, sort of one-to-one. So as the recycler view scrolls, the app bar layout also scrolls up. So it all looks like it's all one big, nice scrolling motion.
And then you have a number of custom views in AppCompat, right? Replacements for the framework ones.
Yeah.
So it seems like a really good idea for you to not encourage subclassing a particular view. Because, well, did you subclass the right one? Did you do checkbox or app compat checkbox, right? So encouraging this composition mode is probably a really good idea.
Yeah, it's just it only works with coordinate layout so far, which is, no, that's, like, we can't assume that anyone's going to be using that.
Notice how we said right now.
So I remember Adam describing coordinator layout as the Chrome into which the other thing's plugged, and that's because of that it has that capability to use these behaviors, basically. Mm. It's going to call the behavior lifecycle events on the things within it. Right? And then it depends on the things within it actually implementing those behaviors, right? So how would you, if you had a particular custom view or a button, that's not going to have behaviors, right? You need to be one of these magic things that implements behaviors.
Well, each view can define its default behavior and provide it for itself. So there's an annotation that you can provide called default behavior, and you set that in your class, pointing it to a behavior class, whichever one you want it to be the default behavior. And then at runtime, magically, coordinator layout sort of magically inflates that default behavior and just gets attached. And it just works.
It just works.
It just works.
Magic.
It's just magic. It is magic.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, like it saves so much time with the design library because it's much, like, the trouble with the design library is that there's lots and lots of components all trying to coordinate together, which is kind of a cliche term. I've said that many times. But there's so many things which happen together within the design library content. So, for instance, when you have a snack bar, which is the little toast thing at the bottom, if you also have a fab on the bottom right or bottom left, the snap bar is supposed to push the fab up so the snap bar isn't displayed over the fab.
Yeah, that would be very tacky.
Well, exactly. So you'd have to write loads of couple code and animation and all sorts. Whereas with behaviors, you can kind of do that nicely in that everything's sort of disjoint and sort of, well, cohesive. But yeah.
And the reason that this works so elegantly is that what you keep the code for both together, that they're aware of each other, or what is the magic that makes one move out of the way for the other?
Behaviors. So behaviors allow you to, so one of the other things that behavior allow you to do is become dependent on other children. So what you can do is, I'll just describe the snap bar scenario. So when a snap bar comes in, the fab's behavior gets notified that the snap bar is being shown, or a view is being shown that it depends on. And what it does is it checks the translation Y, and then for every translation Y change on the snap bar, it also translates itself with the same value. So as the snap bar comes in, the fab also moves up with the same amount.
So that's a close connection between those particular components. It's not going to know, like, if other things are plugging into the coordinator layout that, you know, get written later that should also affect this, then you're going to have to go back.
Well, how does the floating action button become aware of this snack bar on the bottom? Like, is that just coded in? Like, we know that these things need to coordinate? Or is there some sort of, like, tell me when you add new children because I want to basically move out of the way for them?
So, yeah. So the fab's behavior does check for actual snack bars.
Okay.
Because
there's some children dependency. Like, it's a small community of the things that are plugging into the coordinator layout that kind of know about each other.
But you can easily write your own and plug yourself into that. So say you want to write your own view, which also plugs into this snap bar behavior.
Right, but then if your view that you wrote, like if you come up with a better snack bar, an alternate thing that's also going to push up from the bottom, then our fab is not going to know about that and know to push itself out.
Agreed.
Right. So all the pieces that are going to affect each other do tend to need to know about each other, right?
Pretty sure the material design doesn't really want two snack bars.
It was a simple example.
Okay,
let's not call it a snack bar. Let's call it like a high tea bar.
I will say for the record that in the beginning when I heard people talking about this stuff, the fab pushes the snack bar, and that, you know, I could not understand anything.
And now, was it their accent?
I was trying to use the word floating action button now as a reminder of what it is to, you know, people who are feeling the way I felt in the beginning.
And what does snack bar stand for? What's that an acronym for?
It'd be a pretty long acronym.
It would. So I've noticed in the past few days in this great city of London that all signs are incredibly verbose and the punctuation is immaculate in all of them. And instead of saying construction zone, they will say, please excuse the inconvenience and walk across the street on the other curb because we're currently working on this. And it just tails right off the end of the sign. They use so many words to describe every simple situation. So,
in the U.S., they won't even use the word crossing. It'll say X-ing.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't. I mean, that's too many letters for us to parse. We're busy over there.
Saving money on paint.
So, in fact, snack bar probably is an acronym for something in England, I'm sure of it.
I'll have a think and try and...
Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll figure that out for listeners.
All right. So we were talking actually about the app bar layout, and then we sort of kind of went into the coordinator layout, the sort of background theory. So app bar layout.
So app bar layout is, as I said earlier, the view which controls the toolbar scrolling. So you can add multiple things to it. For instance, a toolbar, also tabs, also a special thing which we call collapsing toolbar layout. Basically, what App Bailout does is controls its scrolling. So each child can say that I want to scroll. Basically, there's some scroll flags that you set. The most important one is scroll, and that says that for every let's assume a recycler view. For every recycler view scroll event, this app bar layout will also scroll by that same event. So it's one-to-one. There's also a couple of other flags which implement the quick return pattern. And the quick return pattern is when the app bar layout has been sort of scrolled off screen. And now for any scroll down, that app bar layout will suddenly appear again. You probably don't notice it, but it's in most Google apps.
Yeah, it's like the Google Plus for sure does that.
Google Plus, yeah.
When you're hunting for how do I get to this other thing, you just scroll a little back and
there
it is.
I've seen a similar pattern in Chrome as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a couple of other flags which sort of affect all that kind of stuff. And they're just variations on scrolling. It's you choose which one you want and then it does it for you.
So all the different pieces that we talked about, can you give me like a model of how they fit together in a hierarchy? So at the top, you're going to have coordinator layout into which these other things plug.
Yep.
And then the top child of a coordinator layout would generally be an
app bar layout. Yeah.
Okay. And then where are the toolbars going? Are those like who's a sibling or child?
So within the app bar layout, it depends what you want. Now, the most simple scenario that most apps are going to use is just a toolbar and a tab layout. So you just have a toolbar and tabs.
Inside the app.
The app bar layout.
Okay.
And tabs is sort of the generally recommended way to organize content right now with material design.
I'll defer to that, to the material design spec.
Okay. All right.
So navigation? No. Those are actually going inside the drawers, which is a separate concept. The drawers are going inside the coordinator layout?
No. So at the moment so that's kind of planned. We meant to get to it, but we didn't. So we're still sticking to draw layout. That would actually be the if you're going to use a drawer, then that would have to be the top bar, the top sort of view in the hierarchy.
Wait, so if all of these things, apart from drawers, which sounds like are sort of intermediate right now, a different situation, if everything's going inside the app bar layout, which is inside the coordinator layout, it sounds like there's an overlap of functionality. Like we have a single child of the coordinator layout, which is app bar layout. Why isn't that functionality actually meshed together? Like, what's the advantage of having those separated from each other if they're both sort of the controlling mechanism for all of these?
So it kind of goes back to the distinction between design library and app compat, in that app compat gives you only what the framework gives you. And because none of this scrolling behavior or anything like that is in the framework, we can't shove it into toolbar or whatever.
And is that's a deliberate direction, I take it, that we are now putting all these new widgets instead of putting them into API 23 and then living with them forever past, whatever the next UI paradigm is going to be. Now it's a library?
I don't know. It seems to have gone that way, but there's no, directive for it.
Did you add any new widgets, as far as you know, into
me personally?
You or your team?
I have not, nor will I ever. New widgets? I don't think so. I think the general philosophy now is, if we can add something to support library, we probably should, because then we allow it to be used on other releases, and I think that's a good thing. But also, widgets, especially higher-level widgets, more complex widgets, tend to be, I wouldn't say fashion-driven, because I don't think these things are ever trendy, but you can imagine where a widget might be really powerful and exciting. Something like, tabs might be a powerful UI expression now. And then in 5 years, nobody uses it. And if you have put that into the framework, all of a sudden these are APIs that you need to support forever, whether or not anybody's using them. So
it makes more sense. Like the Zoom buttons widget that we have. we have one of those.
Yeah.
Do we?
Yeah. There are wonderful examples of this. So the general approach of the framework has always been, we add the plumbing, we add the basics that everybody's going to need to build up more complex widgets. So we have a text view, we have a button, we have checkbox, all the sort of canonical things that you're going to need and the plumbing pieces that make those work. And then the more complex widgets like Recycler View probably belong elsewhere.
I heard App Compat has a checkbox too.
We have a version of pretty much every view.
Okay, what's the reason for that? Is that because of theming or what?
Yeah, so theming is the main reason. Theming and tinting. So there's no...
Actually, that's something I want to have a whole separate subject conversation about in this interview. So, stay where you are. But maybe we should wrap up the design library first.
Okay.
Sure. Did we miss any cool widgets?
I don't think we missed anything. I can remember. I think we're good.
All right. So this is all available now.
Yeah, it is.
Is this in preview form?
No, this is final.
Ready for production release.
Kinda.
All bugs have been erased from the product.
So we kind of messed up slightly the V22.2 release, which is I.O. basically, in that the build that got cut and went out was kind of buggy. It got cut about 4 days before we needed to be.
Oh, whoops, you meant that branch. Sorry.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
So luckily we're having a hotfix release very soon.
Okay.
Probably out by the time this goes out.
So there's an important point here, though, that the support library, when we come out with that, like even when we're, you know, coming out with a preview release, the preview release that we talked about at I.O. For M is basically, well, here's the current state of the APIs and the functionality that is going into the M release. Check it out and play with it, but don't build apps depending on it. And in fact, I think the Play Store will keep you from posting apps that actually target that SDK version because things may change out from under you, which means if you target those APIs and then we slightly modify those APIs on the thing that we ship, your app will crash or will not run properly on users that actually have the real version, right? So that simply doesn't work as a development model until the full release comes out, whereas the support library is statically linked against, right? So whether or not it's, you know, some early version, it's like, well, check out this, you know, the data binding stuff or whatever it is, you know, it's early, it's probably going to change a little bit. In the meantime, you can link against it. You know, maybe there's language there saying you may not want to build an app on it because, you know, some of these things are still in flux. But it's not like your app is going to crash when we change it later because that's just something else that you would statically link against instead.
But I think we should probably reiterate what we just said because this is something that is not well understood, as evidenced by all the bug reports we get on this. So the last time we had a preview was in the Honeycomb days and then last summer, of course, with Lollipop. And what happens is that when you compile against the preview version, we will force the min SDK and the target SDK to the exact same string, not number, right? So we get every year, well, last summer, and I'm sure now, again, we're getting these bug reports where like, I set my min SDK to 14 in the manifest, yet I cannot install it on any device except for my preview device. And that is something we're doing behind the scenes. We are ignoring your min SDK. We're setting it to the preview. And that is the policy basically to prevent the situation where you upload your app to, you know, the Google Play Store, and then it crashes later. So it's very deliberate, not a bug. It's unfortunate that you can't both incorporate new M features as well as, you know, release your app with support for older, but that's basically there for a reason.
Exactly.
Yep. But the preview phase is not that long. So basically play with it now and then rebuild your app using the real stuff.
Yeah, and at least with Gradle, it's pretty straightforward to have a couple of different source sets, right? So you put your M stuff in a separate, you know, build type or flavor, and then, you know, that one you don't distribute. That's where you put your, you know, your extra source sets with extra sources that do this.
So all you need to do this properly is to understand how Gradle works.
In theory, you can use the project structure dialog in Android Studio to create a new source set, and all of a sudden it should just work. It might, if you're going to do this level of sorcery, you might want to understand a bit more about Gradle as well.
Which is great. As a
sorcerer, you probably don't mind learning Gradle.
Great. Yeah.
All right.
In fact, the final thing said about that is because we're statically linked, we can also iterate quicker than the framework. So the framework obviously has whatever it is, 9 months in between states. Whereas the support libraries, we can release whenever we need to, which is important, for instance.
Yeah, so your hotfix can actually come out in the near future instead of saying, sorry about M, we'll see you in
next release. Yeah, exactly.
In theory, you could also delete or change APIs.
Yes, we have done in the past.
Yeah.
It's certainly easier
because
to have
it's a compile dependency.
Model
so you can say, hey, to get this, you have to basically update your code, whereas a framework could never delete it because then old apps would stop running.
Yeah, that would be tacky if we actually broke
apps
that's built on the old stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we try not to in the support library, but sometimes it happens. Just because we don't have that burden that the framework does and that we don't have to support like versions going back.
Well, and you're arguably doing a favor to all the developers who don't want the broken feature to bloat their apps.
Exactly. Right? And that's exactly the reason.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about, we started talking about theming. So now I guess we're over on the app compat subject.
We are indeed.
And so what are the really great features that are new in app compat?
So let's take a step back. So When I was last on the show...
We took a couple of big steps, but...
Well, we never
stuck forward.
Yes. Okay. Three more frames off the stack.
Get DeLorean out. So when I was last on the show, it was V21 that released, sort of the first version of AppCompat. And it was quite... that sort of the view tinting and sort of theming side of that was quite, I'd say, early days. Now, we've had subsequent releases since. We've had V22 and V22.1. Since then, and we've like that kind of side of AppCompat has really come about, has come further. So back to V21, we had a number, I think it was four views that we automatically tinted for you. Toolbar was one of them, checkbox, radio button, some list controls basically. And basically, we've expanded that further and further. So we now have spinner, edit text, autocomplete text view, multi autocomplete text view.
So just to make sure that it's clear. So this tinting you're talking about is the ability for when you set the material theme attributes like color primary, and you have assets in your widgets, and you're setting icons, and those are just like monocolored, you change them to whatever the theme color is. Exactly. That's what this does. And it works in a backwards way.
It does.
All the way back to 2.1?
Yeah.
That's Android API 8?
Seven.
So the reason we don't even display 7 anymore in Android Studio is because the usage base for 7 is like 0.
We can't
zero.
Kind of change it now because it's kind of it's baked into our package name for a start. So we're android.support.v7.
So are you telling me that the support v4 actually supports v4?
Mostly.
Okay, wow. All right.
So yeah, it's fun. So the reason why we have to do all this weird widget stuff is that theme attributes are only usable in drawables in Lollipop and above. That was something that was added. Now, before
in a drawable XML file. So if you create like a selector, you can reference add color, whatever, and that would work. Okay.
And we can't do that before. And because there's no way currently of hooking into drawable inflation or anything like that, we have to add sort of a layer on top of view instead. And so this special... with this special spinner class, will automatically tint the background view or whatever it is using the color control normal or whatever color we want.
I see. So if you have a checkbox in your app, but you want to also theme your app with color primary, for example, then you want to replace, you want to find your layouts, and you want to replace your references to checkbox with app bar checkbox. Is that correct?
You can do. We automatically do it for you. So we hook into layout inflator. Which is kind of cool. It's kind of magic in a way. So whenever a layout requests checkbox or spinner or whatever it is, we kind of inject AppCompat's version.
I see. So the only reason you need to know about these widgets is if you are instantiating these by code.
Or extending them. So
if you're extending, if you have a custom view, then this will not work. I see.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
So it's, yeah. Luckily, most developers have kind of caught on quite quickly, so it kind of works. It's still the odd bug here and there where we have to make it more obvious.
Wait, so what's the trigger for you to magically instantiate these instead?
Always, pretty much.
Always when people are using AppCompat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So whenever those layouts are inflated.
You will unconditionally have your own layout inflator injector, and it will see, this is not a custom view, so I get to replace you.
Yeah, so the way it works is an interface called Factory, and that's on Layout Inflator. And so we set ourselves as a factory on Layout Inflator, and we get given the parent class, the parent view, the name of the view that's to be inflated, and then an attribute set, and that's it, I think.
Okay. Your implementation has the same, I mean, it extends the other one, right? So that find view by ID and casting just continues to work.
Well, we don't get that far, actually. All we do is, so we get given that name, which is a string.
Yeah.
We just do a switch case, basically, on that. And then if we find spinner, we just return new AppCompat spinner.
But that one extends spinner so that anyone...
It does.
All right.
So their code looks the same. They don't even necessarily know that this is happening. But if they check out their app in a hierarchy viewer, or if they walk the views, then they're going to see some different class names they didn't expect.
Magic.
It is magic.
Yeah, it's good. Like it's took a while for us to get there. There's lots of hacks in there, but we've kind of...
You don't say.
we're kind of over it now, haven't we? In a stable state, I'd say.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, so you do theming magic. What else?
The view tinting?
So the other thing that was added in 22.1 is that we have extracted all of app compatibility's internals. So the reason why apps have to extend app compatibility is that it does a load of stuff for you, for instance, with menus and toolbars and all sorts. Whereas previously it was very opaque. You either extended app compatibility or you didn't use app compat. There was no in-between state. And so what we've done instead now is that we've extracted all of that code that app compatibility used into an actual public API, which means that you don't actually have to extend app compatibility anymore.
Nice.
You can instantiate app compat delegate, is what we call it. And then as long as you call through to the methods properly, so they're all lifecycle methods, like on resume or on create, whatever. As long as your custom activity calls through to them, it all just works. Which means that the main reason why this was added was so that people could use preference activity.
Yes.
Or other custom-based
classes. So this is one of those really difficult parts in the past where you could create a compatible version of your app, but if your app was using a preference activity, if you wanted to have help, there was no backport for that. And that one has API, what, 11 or 14 or something? And so you were kind of like, well, you know.
Well, you can use, use preference activity all the way back to API 1.
What was the issue? I remember there was
preference
something.
Fragment, I guess.
Maybe it's a dialogue. There's some issue where it was, because I had a sample app, and this was one part I could not do, and I was looking at Stack Overflow and elsewhere, and it's like, well, this is tricky.
So the thing that was added in API 11 was preference fragment.
Yeah, okay,
so you
that's
have
it.
Multiple panes.
Yes.
Now, we still don't have a backport for that, but what it means is that you can...
Oh, will that take back all my excitement? That was the part I was trying to do, and now you're telling me it's still not
done. It's recorded.
All right. Well, there's always support library v24. Actually, did I just reveal the next version number?
Oh, no. We'll go back and edit this and just wipe out all references to Tor.
Should have gone with fake Tor again.
Yeah. You're telling me.
It's much safer.
And that's what we added. So you can use any custom activity class with Acapat now. But another thing that you can also do, so because we added this, and so we've extracted and sort of added this delegate class, you can also now have dialogues. We've now got our own custom dialogue-based class, as we do, and also alert dialogue. So you can create an app compat dialogue and an app compat alert dialogue, and they will look the same as Lollipop or M. And that goes all the way back again to Android 2.1.
That's great.
Yeah.
Cool. App compat, papering over framework problems.
Apparently. It's, thanks for fixing our stuff. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay, so what else is going on? I think that was the main code stuff. So we just got back.
I want to talk about one other thing that I'm very excited about, and this is probably like the world unveiling of this feature, because we haven't actually talked about it anywhere else. Private resources. So one of the things that people love about App Compat is that, you know, when they're in Android Studio and they invoke code completion to, let's say, complete the, you know, at drawable something, the first 7,000 or 8,000 items that you match is going to be AC something, app compat underscore something else, right? Yeah. So it's basically impossible to find your own resources because app compat is alphabetically first and alphabetically numerous. So
yeah, we probably should have chose a better prefix.
Yeah, something with Z would have been, or Z since I'm in London, would have been better. Anyway, we now have potentially a solution for that, right? And that's called private resources. So there is a way for you as an application developer to designate which resources are intended to be exported by your app. Because most of it in App Compat is actually there for the action bar backport, right? It's not really something that you intend users of App Compat to also use. So you can basically say, hey, you know, this resource is basically public. Everything else is private. And so in Android Studio, we now filter all the private stuff out of code completion, for example. And there's several other things we do as well. So lint will flag it if someone tries to use your private resource. But Chris has basically gone into design library and app compat.
And app compat, yeah.
And decorated what you really want to export.
Yep. So that's going into the M release, hopefully. And so, yeah, assumed you, which is kind of, so actually, I've got a question for you. So will that stop people using those resources, or is it just a lint rule, or like a warning?
Did you just say just a lint rule? Because that, I have so many issues with that.
Okay,
is it really basically like an ultimate authority on what is correct and what is not?
Unless you turn it off like I do.
You're killing me. Yeah. No, it's true. It is just a it's just a lint rule at this point. Now, you know, if you set the severity of a lint rule to fatal, that means that when you are actually building your app for a release build, we run all the fatal severity checks, and if we find any, we break the build. So, you know, you can think of lint rules as compiler errors if you yourself change the severity from either warning or error to fatal. So error and fatal seem the same, and they get like a red underline, but the distinction is fatal is automatically run on a release build and it breaks the build. But yeah, no, behind the scenes, you still, this does not actually make the resource private in the sense that if you have two libraries and they both have the same name, they will conflict. They will be considered aliases. But at least this will tell you that, hey, there's a conflict, right? So this is like, I think, a first step. It'd be nice if in the future we could do something packaging-wise, right, where separate apps actually get separate namespaces. But this is not that. This is basically a way to let you, the library or app developer, do the same thing the framework gets to do, right? So in the framework, you'll see there is a public XML file where they say, these are the publicly available things, so that all the stuff that's internal to the framework doesn't get to be touched by anyone outside the framework. Now you can sort of do the same thing. At least you won't have accidental, you know, uses of something that wasn't intended to be overridden. But, you know, more importantly, at least just as a user of AppCompat, it's no longer going to, you know, confuse you in the sense that it's only going to show you the things that you're really trying to access. And I think today that's mostly themes and attributes, right?
Yeah.
That's really what AppCompat is exposing to you, not really strings.
Or, yeah, drawables, strings.
Yeah.
There's also base styles. So AppCompat has a huge sort of hierarchical style, style hierarchy, basically.
And that's done really to make magic work, but not something that you're supposed to be extending.
Exactly. So anything that's not with base, based up, you shouldn't be using. That's internal implementation details. Anything that's not with theme or style or theme overlay, whatever that, that's you can use. That's public API.
Yeah. We were chatting, I think, I can't remember if it was before the interview began or during
just
this.
Feels like
so,
this
you know,
been going on.
The listeners will know whether or not we actually talked about this, but we're talking about resource shrinking.
That was pre-interview, so this is the first time it's come up on air. Go.
Really? Okay, well, I think I know that I've talked about this before because I'm very excited about it. But anyway, one possibility here is now that we actually, if developers tell us which resources are private and we see two libraries and you're saying that these things are private, we can use the same code that we have for resource shrinking to actually rename them on the fly and actually let you have private resources. Let's be clear, this is not implemented yet, right? But it's a theoretical possibility that once they've been, you know, that once we're compiling this way, we could on the fly rename it. So anyway.
No one taught it'll be implemented tomorrow.
we'll see about that. All right.
But one thing the syntax for that is the same as the framework version, isn't it? So it's public.xml for libraries is exactly the same syntax as what the framework does.
Yeah.
So
the only thing is you're not allowed to enter, like for the framework, you have to enter the actual number, the R ID that you're supposed to, that this is bound to. For obviously, you're not allowed to do that for libraries because they have to be renumbered because you could have a conflict. But yeah, it's the same syntax, which is also why you have to use version 1.3 of the Gradle plugin for this feature because in previous versions, we did not let you actually use the file name public. You know, that was because that's a keyword in Java. Anyway, we fixed that.
Is it just like a whitelist somewhere?
Yeah. Yeah. No, those resources aren't actually resources. So at build time, we'll go, ooh, this is a public definition. We need to put those into this other file that the IDE and lint will use later to, you know, to decide how to treat resources.
Cool.
All right.
IO. We were going to, after all the library stuff, we're going to see how is IO for you?
I think I've just about gotten over it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great this year.
You did something on design lib, right?
Yeah, so we had a talk, a sandbox talk, and both times were hugely packed out. It's kind of hard to explain, but like the sandbox talks this year were all sort of small areas, and we had one of the, what they call the alcoves, which are the slightly bigger ones. I think it's designed for 100 people or so. But what people were doing is they were basically standing on the outsides of this alcove area, and there must have been about the same amount of people on the outside as there were inside.
Just sticking their heads through the little holes in the cardboard.
but yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it this year. I thought it was good. It felt a lot more laid back this year.
We really should make that recorded.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, because I talked to some folks in DevRel about sandbox talks. There were other ones that were quite crowded, people didn't necessarily get into, and they weren't recorded. But I think the intention is for most of the applicable talks to go back and record them. Is that right?
Yeah, That's the plan, to record them as I/O bytes or dev bytes, whatever.
Yeah. So sometimes it may be broken out into like simpler material, but I thought maybe some of them might even come out as the same talk. So that's the intention. I think it depends on sort of the people in the situation.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, the plan is for us to record the design lib one as a couple of dev bytes. Ian Lake is actually doing those.
Okay. That would be great. In the meantime, you have the sample that you wrote for the talk or for your blog piece on it.
Yeah, so I wrote a quick sample about the weekend before my talk, and it seems to be the only canonical sample of the design library. So I thought it's probably better to actually release it. So I did that at I/O, and it seems to it's very popular, if you know that way. There's many stars on it on GitHub. But yeah, it's good. It's not the greatest sample in the world. It's not so many comments or anything like that.
How much time do you spend using your library? When you develop a new feature, how much time do you spend on actual usage of the library or in an app versus the actual code in the library?
It's kind of hard because when you're writing a library, you have to make, as with anything, you make assumptions in your mind of how people are actually going to use it. And until people start banging on it themselves, you never know. And so there's been loads and loads of bugs and feedback since the design library has been released. Of situations and scenarios I didn't even think of. So that's been good. It's been really good for us, basically. And so we've kind of got most of those fixed or on the way to being fixed. The design library this year was kind of different to AppCompat. So AppCompat, all of the internal apps teams jumped on it really early because they wanted it. With a design library, most of them had existing code to do what we have. So, for instance, the fab or scrolling or whatever it is, they've already got their own internal implementation details. Yeah. And because we're all racing to get to I/O and release things, they didn't want to sort of risk their code base or, you know, release things which aren't quite finished. So we didn't have so much internal testing for the design library, which is why it's good to get it out.
Whereas AppCompat is used by basically everyone.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy the amount of apps you use it. I was reading the other day that I think every single... Well, no, that's not true. But most internal apps teams use it.
Yeah, well, I think anyone who uses Android Studio and set their main SDK version to anything less than 21 will also get it.
That's cool.
For free.
So even internally, there's more and more teams using Android Studio, isn't there, which is good.
So yeah. We charge other developers for it? Just to be clear here, I didn't know we did that. Is this
we
the revenue
don't talk
model?
About that chat.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll delete this.
No, yeah, we're giving away for free, but we'll make it up in volume.
Okay.
Lots of free volume.
That's right.
Cool. Yeah. So, yeah, what did you think of I/O?
Similar. I gave a couple of talks, which were also sort of packed out. Mm-hmm. So that's always fun. I like giving talks because then I have the best seat in the room. It gets a bit crowded out there, so it's much better to be on stage. I have a little bit of space to sort of
spread. The room's
out.
Really good this year. I was in your What's New in Android talk, and like the whole... Square 360 screens were really nice.
You don't really get a sense of that when you watch the video.
No, well, you don't. But when you're in there, it's cool.
Yeah. It was a nice big open space in that room. That was same room where the other talk was. So yeah, it was good. It was nice. It was very open for the people that didn't make the event this year. They sort of had a big open area with what they call it, the playground. Like structures that looked like you should climb on them, but I don't think that was the intention, but just sort of, you know, an open collaborative space for people to sit down and check email in. I don't know. Yeah, it definitely had a different look and feel this year.
I think it's hard to separate I/O for me from all the releases we also did, right? And so, you know, we had this mad dash, and you could say it's the mad dash to I/O, but really it was for the release that we had tried to coincide with I/O. And, you know, so we had some big unveiling of features like the, you know, the C and C++ support in Studio. And, you know, that was very well received. A lot of people have been waiting for it, I think.
Nice.
So it was very fun. You know, so to me, I/O was good, but also all the
stuff leading
all
up to
the
it.
Talking to people around all the things we release. And people are excited about different things. So the C++ support one, but, you know, all the other things we demoed and so forth. It's really fun to...
Yeah, it's good to get it out.
Yes, exactly. And start talking to people about it and getting feedback and adjusting, you know, the features based on the feedback. It's very rewarding.
There's a joke about conference-driven development, which, you know, it's sort of a sad commentary that so much is geared around these, you know, marketing-related events. But it's true. It's a forcing function for actually pushing the releases out there for fine-tuning the details on at least a preview release or associated material. So the thing I was working on coming up to the conference was sort of pushing the initial set of those articles out at the same time. It's like, this is a good announcement time for whatever it is you happen to be working on around that time period. So whether it's the sample app for the design library itself, or the Android Studio release, or articles or publications, or the release, the actual software. So all of that stuff tends to, you're kind of rushing on all of it in parallel right up to the conference, and then
boom. Plus, I think when people mock conference-driven development, they really think more of the, you know, when an executive stands on stage and announces some feature that we are going to do that hasn't been implemented.
Yes.
And, you know, so you get really vaporware, and that's
coming
you can make
soon.
Fun of that. But I think that, you know, trying to get a feature ready to hand to developers at a conference, that's a bit different, right? I mean, it's natural to take advantage of that level of attention, right? Where you can actually have a dialogue and people are tuning in to find out what's new. Because if you just if you dribble it out throughout the year, it's hard to sort of get the same conversation and impact with what you're doing.
Which is, I mean, that's the other nice thing about things like I/O or other conferences of the same sort of scope, is that you get a chance to then interact with people about it for the first time, because you're not talking about it beforehand. Then all of a sudden the stuff comes out, and then the people that actually need and use this stuff on a daily basis have a time to sort of soak it in and talk to you about it. You know, maybe they've started banging on your samples immediately, and then they have some immediate feedback, or they're at least talking about how they're going to use this stuff, and they ask questions or whatever. So it's always good sort of hanging out and chatting with folks as well.
So we had the trade-off of, should we put out a build in the Canary channel before I/O so that we can get some feedback on it and fix the worst bug so that it's beta at I/O? So we could do that, but then all like the excitement would kind of like just deflate. And then so like, okay, well, we fixed a few bugs, here you go, at I/O, right? Whereas instead, well, we just hold it a few more weeks, and then we can, it'll be more exciting to unveil all the stuff we've done. But it does mean that it's still a Canary build, and we'll have a, you know, beta soon. And that's the latter is what we opted for.
It's the Android Studio preview.
Yes.
We call it Canary for a reason. Canaries are meant to die in the coal mine. So
I don't think that's the ideal scenario. But
it is what they're invented for.
You know, so. I'm not a coal miner, but I do think that, you know, the idea is to save coal miners, not to kill canaries.
It's the same thing. I think just the flip side of the same coin. So,
all right.
That's all I got.
Me too.
Back to work. Should we go write some code?
Get coffee first.
Should we set up a calendar appointment for interview number 3? When is that?
6 months time?
Yeah.
Maybe next time, fake chat.
Yeah, I'd say so.
All right.
Maybe fake tour. Maybe both. Fake tour and fake chat.
Uh-oh. I think he's taken over the podcast.
Yeah.
All Chris Baines all the time.
Yeah. No, I'm super excited about all the work you've done on this stuff. I think that, you know, there's this other podcast I was listening to, and they were the Fragmented podcast, and they were walking around the halls at I/O and asking, you know, developers, like, what they, you know, well, all these questions. You know, my favorite question was, of course, asking developers if they prefer the dark theme or the light theme in Android Studio. But they also asked, hey, what are the top 3 libraries that you'd need to, if you were only given 3, which ones? And for every one of them, it was like, and of course you can have the support libraries, because that was a given, because, you know, you didn't want to blow the question, well, I need AppCompat, and, you know.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, I think it was a pretty nice statement of where AppCompat is today. It's, I think, indispensable. Yep. So, yeah.
Go back a bit, light or dark?
Dark theme for me, for sure. Darkula. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't get used to it. It's a bit too dark for me.
Well, it might be. I mean, I've seen your workspace now. It's very light. So I think that if you're in, and in fact, I have to admit that I switch to the light theme when I'm on the shuttle bus, right? If there's glare, then I need the light theme. But, you know, for my daily driver, it's the dark theme.
When you're in a cave.
Yeah. It's not exactly a cave, but, you know, like when I'm not squinting,
the coal mine.
I find the dark theme to be, you know, more pleasant.
I picture you working in home, sort of in a dungeon, listening to Nine Inch Nails. A lot of sort of leather and chains around.
No, it's ABBA. It's Dancing Queen, you know, but then, you know, with the dark theme.
Are you waiting for, like, the pink theme then? You want something a little brighter and happier?
Hey, now, it's very good music.
Sure.
I think on that bombshell.
Yeah, we better close this out now.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot.